All right, here we are again. Paper 118, section 7, which is old single column, page 1300. Ooh. Tristadectophobia is in full play here. All right. Okay, so we've got another omni prefix. Maybe just remember how they've been building this with the omnipotence and compossibility, and then omnipotence and omniscience. And you know, the key is the second word of what's building, obviously. You know, they're trying to, really lead you through that process of the infinite one freeing himself from the fetters of unqualified infinity, and what consequences that has. There is our distinct laws, conformity with possibility, compossibility, that are in play when God as transcendence acts. Even though he's transcendent, he still has to conform with possibility, and he doesn't take all deity out of the whole. There's lots of deity in the whole that has, that is exercising creator prerogatives. So he's not, God as transcendence is not all doing. That is distributed amongst all of the other creators. And now, we're ready for the next step. You may have all-knowingness, omniscience, but that doesn't imply predestination. And we're going to work our way through that. And it's really these first two paragraphs, you notice they're set off by a big gap. Those first two paragraphs are giving a nice little summary of what we touched upon a little while ago. You may remember that the notion of predestination came up when we were talking about God the Supreme in detail, and we were talking about God the Mother and God the Almighty, and their relationship in that totality of God the Supreme, and how you understand how righteousness, maybe I should go all the way, how divinity and iniquity, fit into that very binary picture that is set up in the finite by those two sides, by the personal purposive on the one side and the power pattern on the other side. We got into a bit of a conundrum when we were talking about that. And I remember I mentioned that was important that you sort of get to that step where you seem to be at an impasse with trying to understand things from your initial notions, whether they be something you've kind of built up on your own or if you're really kind of living off of pre-existent notions, like literally, those who subscribe to predestination, say, whatever the source, if you, it's really not so much if, but when you come up against one of these paradoxes, one of these roadblocks, these conundrums, that's what you're looking for. You're looking for that point where the limits of that little bubble of understanding that you currently have come up against reality and aren't up to it. You know, they can't, you can't wrap your mind around that bigger, more objective space of reality. That's what you're looking for, because that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to find something that can stimulate an expansion, you know, a growth to a greater capacity that can wrap around that bigger picture. You know, it's to be sought. You know, you want to look for something where you seem to be coming up against, I don't know about that. You know, that's exactly what you're looking for with the revelation. The revelation is trying to reach you there. And it's a perfect place to begin the reformation of your mind when you find one of those. Don't, you know, turn around, go back, don't go off to the side. Just go right at it and keep at it until your consciousness expands enough that you can embrace that. Okay, so let's take the first paragraph here.
Omniscience and predestination. The function of creator will and creature will in the grand universe operates within the limits and in accordance with the possibilities established by the master architects. This foreordination of these maximum limits does not, however, in the least abridge the sovereignty of creature will within these boundaries. Neither does ultimate foreknowledge, full allowance for all finite choice, constitute an abrogation of finite volition. A mature and far-seeing human being might be able to forecast the decision of some younger associate most accurately, but this foreknowledge takes nothing away from the freedom and genuineness of the decision itself. The gods have wisely limited the range of the action of immature will, but it is true will, nonetheless, within those defined limits.
Yeah, these defined limits, yeah. Okay, well, let's start at the end of the paragraph and work our way into it. Just notice one little thing there in that last sentence. But it is true will. Yeah, remember, you know, it means, you know, if it's true, it's you know, conformal with the cosmos. Okay, so now just think about what they're saying there in that context. They're saying it is conformal with the cosmos, yes, but not the cosmos infinite. Okay, right? It's, you know, it's within defined limits, and what limits are those? You know, they're the limits of the finite. You know, see, so it is true, but you know, it is conformal with the cosmos. But you've got to know which level of the cosmos you're talking about. Okay, because the cosmos is hierarchical. You know, cosmos infinite at the top, and you're not, you know, functioning in that space yet. You're down the bottom, working your way up the cosmic levels. So that's a real nice way to express, you know, to sum up what they were saying there, you know, in that paragraph. Okay, so, you know, then back up. You see, you know, they point out the analogy that we almost always bring up. When you're talking about the creators, you know, they're talking about choice. Okay? But they say, well, drop it down to the decision level. And just think about, like, you as a parent, you know, with your child. And think about decisions that that child is making. You know, if you have any, you know, experiential wisdom, you can be watching what that child is doing, and you know what's coming next. Okay? Is it because you're a prophet? Is it because of clairvoyance? No. Okay? It's obvious. Okay? You know how things play out. You know, so all they're saying, you know, you can understand this. This is not hard to understand. It's just, you know, at a higher level, it's not just decisions of selves. It's choices of personalities where there's quite a bit of objectivity about it. Now think about that. You know, so they say, neither does ultimate foreknowledge full allowance for all finite choice. That's a really great little definition there, see, of foreknowledge. Full allowance for all finite choice constitute an abrogation of finite volition. When we were talking about this before, We were visualizing. It's like, okay, so you've got all these creatures, in the down here in the finite with us, and we all have free will. And in other words, we have all these creatures, and it's totally in flux. Nothing is predestined. You have free will. It's just, think of it as it's in complete flux. You know, I'm complete. To the boundaries of supremacy. Like I said, they know the range of finite choice. It's finite. They know what that space is, that everything is free to move around in. So they can do a lot of constraining in the, relative to that definitive knowledge. They don't know whether or not you are going to choose divinity or iniquity, or you are going to choose divinity, but they know that no matter what choices we're talking about, they're in within this space, except for one little thing, and it's related to that divinity and iniquity. Remember, they mentioned that, I don't know if I can find it, but they just pointed it out in one of the, last week when we were reading, that you've got one choice that transcends the finite, the supreme choice of whether or not you're going to be a phenomenon that will eventually transcend the finite. And in that regard, we've got this, we've discovered through, going through this, like I said, we discovered that's quite constrained still. There's really only two choices. There's divinity and iniquity. And did you see it up just, a tad, yeah. I think it was at the end of a paragraph, wasn't it? Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, that's right. It's just immediately up there. Yeah. And just two paragraphs back, yeah. Okay. And we were talking about that. We were trying to think about that. That you can't just do any old thing. There's only two choices. Divinity, divinity and eternity, or iniquity and oblivion. And how does that binary choice get expressed in the finite? It literally is part of the whole system of the finite, in that if you choose eternity, then you're upheld by God the Mother. If you choose iniquity, then your self, that energy self, blends into the Almighty. And, the purposing potential that you had as an individuated expression of purposing, as a purpose, as a personality, that purposing is taken up by God the Almighty. Those are the two choices. And it all was fairly clear in this bottom-up view. This first paragraph is really this bottom-up view. And so all they are is kind of just restating this whole thing, where you can easily visualize that we have complete free will within the boundaries of the finite. We're in flux, and then at some point you choose. Difficulty was, they told us that we really understand it completely. We needed to look at it both from the bottom up and the top down points of view. And so we brought that in, and there you're really focusing on the part, from that top down view, the part that makes it through the top. So if you're up there in the absonite, and you're looking down at the finite, you see these two streams. Those are being upheld by God the Mother and then God the Almighty, sort of the body of the Supreme Being. You see those two streams coming up. Okay? And you go, well, from this, when all is said and done vantage point, you go, oh, well, no wonder that person that chose iniquity back there, did, because when all is said and done, I see that wasn't a whole personality. That was a part of a personality. It's all part of the personality of God the Almighty when all is said and done. No wonder it didn't make it to the end. And it's like, well, wait a minute. Now that's, boy, that sounds a bit like predestination, doesn't it? Doesn't it seem like, you know, if from that point that was actually, that's actually part of the Almighty, doesn't that mean that that person had no choice but to end up being iniquitous? And see, this is where that, you know, that point of paradox entered in. When we tried to look at it from both the bottom up and the top down, we seem to be forcing ourselves into predestination, trying to bring in then that top down point of view. We left it at that one study group, and then the next study group, remember I pointed out, it's like, what didn't we bring up? What was the key thing that resolves that? Because what is it that brings the two together? It's mind. The thing that's missing in that is supreme mind. Supreme mind is supreme adaptability. That's why you don't end up with predestination, because there's supreme mind. You and I can pick either way. Every creature in the universe, in the grand universe, can pick either way. It doesn't have to be one way or the other. They can pick either way, and the supreme mind can adapt to any choice, because it's supreme mind. It can adapt to any finite choice. So it doesn't matter if you choose to any iniquity, the supreme mind can adapt to that. And when all is said and done, guess what? You've got a supreme being, and you know, things come out. It's the supreme mind. And that's what they bring up in the next paragraph. So you just look at how they're going to bring in the top-down point of view in the next paragraph, and then trying to get you to recognize the supreme mind.
Even the supreme correlation of all past, present, and future choice does not invalidate the authenticity of such choosings. It rather indicates the foreordained trend of the cosmos and suggests foreknowledge of those volitional beings who may or may not elect to become contributory parts of the experiential actualization of all reality.
The supreme correlation of all past, present, and future choice. That is, you know, the encompasser supreme mind. Now, that is the supreme mind that they're talking about. That, and they're just pointing out, see, even when you bring that in to fix, you know, or not fix, but to resolve this conundrum about how you take both points of view and not have it be in conflict, and not lead to predestination. See, notice what they're pointing out. All that means, even bringing in that, is that obviously the supreme mind knows that you are an individual that actually could choose either divinity or iniquity. A creator son, it's not exactly a mystery, you know, which one they're going to choose. Okay? That's what they're pointing out here. See, so, you know, there's a total understanding, total foreknowledge of who are the binary choosers in actuality, and who are the ones just are virtually binary choosers. Yes, it's a true free will choice that the Creator Son makes for divinity, but it's a duh. You know, even with a Melchizedek or a Verondadek, no mystery. Now Lananadek, okay, he's in the same bunch with us. You know, it can go either way. The Supreme doesn't know in advance which way it's going to go. It's not, you know, he just knows that that's one of the things that's in flux. And guess what? As the Supreme Mind that can adapt. You know, if this Lananadek goes bad, can adapt to that. You know, nothing can stop the end from coming. See that that whole bit the indicates the foreordained trend of the cosmos. There is definitely a foreordained trend. The supreme being will be completed. Yeah. But the thing to really reflect on, see, to be able to appreciate what you really mean by supreme mind, is to not water down any of the free will choice. Try to expand that to as many creatures as you can imagine. You know, countless quintillions of creatures, but the supreme mind is on top of that whole vast menagerie. know, and there's nothing that all those countless quintillions of beings can do that will catch him off guard. Yep, I can adapt to that. Yep, I can adapt to any finite set of facts. You know, no supernova, no rebellious Lenonendeck, no nothing is going to catch the Supreme Mind off guard. It can adapt to any set of facts.
There's no timeline to adapting.
Right, it's right there. Yeah. Yep.
Real time.
It's got, it has the adaptability at every level. So, you know, there's no time lag. It's not like it only has adaptability when things get up to here. It's got adaptability from the very bottom all the way to the very top. You know, it permeates, that adaptability permeates the total, you know, vertical character of the finite. Okay.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So this, explain this to me. The Supreme Minds of the, let's say there's a bunch of evil people out there and with their iniquitous ways. So that part of them that has value goes to the Supreme. And then the part that's of no consequence that's really bad or something, where is that? I mean, does that all go to the Supreme?
Well, remember, badness is not is a nothing. You know, badness is an absence of a something. There's nothing to go anywhere. Nothing doesn't have to go anywhere because nothing is nothing. You know, again, you have to challenge, you know, the forever thought. You know, humans have always thought in terms of equal substantiveness, that goodness is something you can squeeze and badness is something you can squeeze. No, there's only one substance. It's good, okay? Badness is the absence of goodness. It's not another thing that's going to have to go somewhere like hell. You know, you don't have to build someplace for that stuff to go. It isn't anything. It doesn't have to go anywhere. It's the absence of something. Okay? You know, it's completely impossible to understand reality from that old notion of the dichotomy, you know, the equality of positive and negative. Okay? They're not equal. One is and the other isn't.
You explain this, the real limit. It made pretty good sense to me is that the value is a column that goes all the way up.
Mm-hmm.
And the lack of value, the evil, is like smoke. I mean, it's got some substantive characteristic now. And from this point of view, we say, oh, these things are equal. But, you know, the smoke dissipates, disappears. So it doesn't last very long. It's just very shallow.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't really
exist. Right. See that in order to really recognize that it's a nothing and not a something, you have to have an objective point of view that's tall enough that you transcend its short height. As long as you're so subjective that, you know, it seems to extend beyond your highest vision, you think it's an equal substance. As soon as you have enough objectivity that you can see beyond its height, remember the vertical is value, then you know it for what it is. It's the absence of something. A real something is something that goes to infinity. Okay? If it doesn't go to infinity, it's not real. It's an absence of something.
When you were talking about the iniquitous, mm-hmm. It's either divinity or iniquity.
Right.
And then you said it goes to the Almighty.
Well, what goes to the Almighty is, first is just the energy, that individual wasn't created or born iniquitous. There's some short track, like Jim is saying, there's some short trail where there was a little bit of goodness, you know, that was left in a wake. I mean, before he was Lucifer, you know, as we know him, you know, he was a good Lenonendeck, you know, ages upon ages of a wake of goodness that he left behind him, you know, and all that goodness, was in him before he evaporated it, you know, that all that goodness that was in him, remember, was reflected into the cosmos. You leave a wake of goodness. There's your goodness that you carry with you, and there's a reflection of it in the cosmos. And that reflection into the cosmos is part of the Almighty. whether or not I choose iniquity or divinity. That wake I leave behind is the Almighty's to keep, because it's His. That's how it, you know, it's gotten reflected into Him. Okay. So with someone who chooses iniquity, you know, when all is said and done, all there is the wake that was left behind and is part of the Almighty. You know, because what was the copy that was reflected was evaporated, literally, you know, dissipated by Lucifer, you know, so there's nothing there, you know, and he chose to cease to use his purposing ability, you know, and purposing comes from the highest source. It's not going to, he can't dissipate the purposing. He's just chosen to not use it anymore. When he becomes iniquitous. And so the purposing has got to go somewhere. Well, it goes to the Almighty too. It's part of the total purposing that is God the Almighty.
Okay. Chris, yeah. Were you going to...
One quick thing. I hope it's quick. We were talking the other day in the Jesus group about Judas Iscariot.
Mm-hmm.
And the writers of this book make a very strong statement that he did not have to do what he did. Christianity has had this problem for a long time.
There's no predestination.
Judas.
Yeah, he's not foreordained.
Right.
Yeah.
And as far as the adaptability, if Judas hadn't done what he did, Jesus may still have ended up on the cross, or maybe not. But it wasn't preordained, and it was his choice. And you know, not only the universe, but Christ took things in stride.
Yeah, we all know that when Jesus was planning his public ministry, you know, he knew that the probability was so close to 100% that there really was not enough time to write that many decimal, you know, that many 99.99999, you know. I mean, you know, he knew it was just about pretty much a given how it was going to end on this benighted sphere. Yeah, but, okay. So, that's right.
The question I have that's a little confusing with this, you know, because it's an interesting concept, and philosophically it makes a lot of sense. What I can't quite square with this is the reaction of all the celestial intelligences to the choice of evil. You know, when we look at the minimal depictions we have.
You mean sin? You mean the conscious choice
sin,
of evil?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the choice of evil is sin.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So.
Yeah. I just didn't know if you were speaking technically or not. Okay. Yeah.
not that technically. Yes.
Okay.
We mean sin.
Right.
So we see sin being chosen, and the celestial beings much more intelligent, brighter, more far-seeing than us. At all kinds of levels in this local universe, are watching the scene of our master on the cross.
Mm-hmm.
And our master, you know, yes, he's taking everything in stride, but there's enough room for his humanity to be saying, "Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem," and there's enough space within the universe for the celestial beings to be saying, to shudder at this sight, which we're not saying that it's preordained, but there's a very tricky philosophical thing we haven't yet determined, and that I haven't really heard talked about when you're talking about this. Well, I guess that person's personality was part of this almighty stream. You know, they were only partly here. When you're saying that, you know, aside from whatever you can do with,
flip it bottom up, and then you don't have that. So you know that isn't the last word about it, because the bottom up seems to not be saying that. It's just to put the two together, you need the supreme mind.
Well, I
mean, they're both true.
I'm not sure how. I'm not sure what the value is in that top-down perspective that says that the personality was never fully here.
Well, the first thing that we know is what they tell us directly, you know, as we're reading through the Supreme Papers. Remember, there was a specific point where they said that you must challenge yourself to look at both points of view. Now, you can say, well, why? Especially in a specific circumstance, I don't see the benefit of that. And their response would be, trust me. Just challenge yourself to do it. They tell us point blank that we're supposed to challenge ourselves to do that. That in order to understand what it is to be part of the evolution of the finite, and they say it is fundamentally a bidirectional flow of creativity. And so even if we can't immediately understand why they want us to try to bring in something, especially when it seems to just muddle the picture, can we trust? Can we stay with it? You know, and maybe at some point that little fly in the ointment, if we don't throw it out, will lead to an expansion of perspective that we weren't aware of, you know, at the time. It may take a long time. Maybe it'll take a million years. We don't know, you know. But we do know that they put the challenge right there in front of us, that the only way to understand what's going on here, you know, we all know for a fact that you and I are a downstepped expression of something. Well, in the finite, the top thing is God the Supreme. But that's technically at the absolute crust of it. As soon as you drop God the Supreme down into the finite, it's a bidirectional flow. It's God the Mother flowing down and God the Almighty flowing up. That's fundamentally the highest thing, is that twofold flow. So everything underneath that reflects that. You know, and we pointed that out when we were going through, you know, when we brought up this chart and we were thinking about our relationship to the adjuster, you know, and seeing how that fits, you know, as a downstepped expression of that, you know, of that bidirectional flow. So, I mean, that's what I would say up front. Even if it doesn't immediately go, you know, give you an aha, don't, you know, just yeah, let it be there.
Well, and I'm one who believes in using thoughts as provocations that way, and I see the value in that up and down flow. What I'm not sure necessarily correlates with it, and I'm just throwing this out as well. You know, we have gone down a road with you, you know, that says, okay, there's this possibility here that some personalities were never fully here.
Right. And I think one of the very first things is just right there, the way you said that. Therein lies the problem.
Okay. Well,
that's why you've heard me very purposely use a more top-down designation, purposing. From an individuality viewpoint, we call it personality, mine, this little individuated thing, mine. But from a top-down viewpoint, it's all one. There is one purposing. Okay? It's not mine. It's part of the infinite all are purposing. Okay? And so that purposingness from a top-down point of view, that personality from a bottom-up point of view. See, it's not so much this little chunk went away. It's just, you know, there's purposing that's, you know, currently identified with this body. Okay? That purposing is part of the total purposing of infinity. It's, you know, from a unity viewpoint, there's nothing has been broken off. It's all one. And so it's not going to go anywhere. It's just going to have a different identification point. It's always going to identify somewhere. Yeah.
So when we're talking about this, you know, we're talking about the beginning and pulling it out, and we can see what the picture looks like at end.
Mm-hmm.
And so here's this picture, a bird's eye view of someplace in Minnesota with lots of lakes. And it's got lots and lots and lots of colors and lots of textures and things. The personality has is kind of like the description that colors and gives texture and features to that little pixel in the picture, for example. And so here's the end, and we know that this is the textures and colors and shapes and things that the personality is gonna end up with, and at that point. So, but we don't know who's going to make that point. Who is identifying with that and embracing that instruction, and becoming it and creating that color or that texture. So we don't know who that is, but we can see that that's where we're going to end up, obviously. But we don't know which path is going to make it, that picture become what they know it's going to be.
Yeah, and you'll see this is going to come up in just a little bit here too. Part of this is bringing in a little bit more reflection on identity and identification. That's a notion that they're slowly trying to work into our consciousness. That allows, like I'm saying, you to have a bidirectional view on yourself as a person. Okay, and you'll see we'll get to that here. Was there one little thing over here before we? Okay. All right, so that, like I said, see, there's a big paragraph break there. Okay, so that's a real, the little vignette. They wanted to touch upon that again. And you can see I generated a lot of thought because this is a big issue. But it needs to be transcended. It's time to leave all of this endless rumination that humans have done about this behind. Let's move forward and not constantly be rehashing the predestination question is what they're saying. Okay, and that's exactly what they do. It's like, okay, now let's move on to the next bigger issue here.
Error in finite choosing is time-bound and time-limited. It can exist only in time and within the evolving presence of the Supreme Being. Such mistaken choosing is time-possible and indicates, besides the incompleteness of the Supreme, that certain range of choice with which immature creatures must be endowed in order to enjoy universe progression by making free will contact with reality.
Okay, just one little bit there. Error is right there in black and white. Okay, and I talked about this several times. You go to the next sentence and it says, such mistaken. And remember, the prefix mis, is used with precision. In the Revelation, miss means wrongly taken. Okay, so when you first start reading the first sentence, you don't know if they're talking about error that's automatically a consequence of evil or just mere error. But they clear it up and they go to the next sentence and it's such mistaken choosing. Okay, so when they're talking about, I choose badness. I give badness form in my mind. That's a wrong choice. And it doesn't, once I choose badness, it doesn't matter if I choose fact or figment. I've got error. The only way for there to be truth is if I have goodness and fact in play and I'm the flow between them. Soon as I have mistaken choosing, error is automatic. No matter how spot on you are with the facts, it's irrelevant. Once you've chosen badness. So So that's what they're bringing in here, this progression, error, evil. And that last little comment, thinking about the logical consequences of the existence of, this possibility of evil. You have this possibility, distinct possibility in play. What does that imply logically? Well, if there is, literally that possibility, that's giving you some indication about the space in which you're functioning. If evil was not a possibility, that would mean that the master architect stuck you in a very tiny little bubble where there's no potential for evil. You can't, okay? You're totally constrained, okay? So just trying to get you to think logically, about how that's telling you about, you've got a complete, from the perspective of evil, you've got a complete span of space that you're, this whole flux we were talking about. You're in flux in a complete space from the perspective of evil. You can go totally negative on it. That means it's a complete space. It's not an incomplete capacity that you're functioning in. Okay, or evil would not be a possibility. Then they just take it to the next notch. Error, evil, you know what's coming next.
Sin in time-conditioned space clearly proves the temporal liberty, even license, of the finite will. Sin depicts immaturity dazzled by the freedom of the relatively sovereign will of personality while failing to perceive the supreme obligations and duties of cosmic citizenship.
Okay, so not only is it a complete space, so that it's true free will from the perspective of evil, but from sin as well. So, that's it. It is complete. You have complete, free will. You can go to the farthest nooks of the finite, without constraint. Okay. Now, that last little bit, and you should have sort of already had the thought in your head in the first part of the paragraph before you read the last part. As soon as they start talking about liberty, as soon as you hear the word liberty, the very first thing that should pop into your head is the true and false Lucifer and the true and false liberty section. No greater problem, has resulted, okay? That sentence should begin to play in your mind. You should immediately start, yes, the discernment between true and false liberty. They told me that there's been no bigger problem that's resulted from the Lucifer Rebellion than the inability to make that discernment, to discriminate between true and false liberty. Yes, you do want to be, discriminating. You want to discriminate against false liberty. With prejudice, okay? This needs to be very, very in the foreground of your mind. And so you immediately jump to there, and we all know, we've talked about this a lot. Remember when we've talked about, this is three examples of cosmic expressions of meaning, where we talked about how you move up the levels of meaning, and you get to the top, then you can bring, what were steps up and create a closed structure, if you will. And you imagine that you now take that and make facets out of what were levels, and you create this faceted cosmic structure, and it's predicated on that vertical ascent of the levels of meaning in some particular instance. So you start reading True and False Liberty, and you immediately come upon this one and this one. And what this, I'm getting there, okay? And what they are facets of self-control, the cosmic facets of self-control, which are predicated on the levels of meaning, and the cosmic facets of personal responsibility. Okay, and if you're right in this mode, you're remembering this, you might even remember some of the words that they use to label the facets, some of the phrases they use to label the facets. And you keep reading, and you go, supreme obligations, and duties of cosmic citizenship. Supreme obligations of cosmic citizenship. That's the facets of personal responsibility. One of the facets is labeled divine obligations. Okay? And then, you know, what is the supreme duties of cosmic citizenship? Well, lo and behold, it's the cosmic facets of self-control. One of the facets is named moral duty. Okay? No. This is something from way back. Yeah, you can get it there on Perfecting Horizons. But it's just, you know, you didn't need it because, you know, I just wanted to, you know, get you to remember, you know, it's worth kind of remembering some of these because they keep touching back on them. They are invoking what they taught you back there in paper 54. You know, here we are in paper 118 with no arrows saying go back to paper. That's what they're doing. They're invoking what they taught you back in paper 54 about, you know, supreme cosmic citizenship and how that has two very definitive structures. The facets of personal responsibility, the obligation, the facets of self-control, the duty. Okay, so they're just masters like that. They drop you right back to Lucifer and true and false liberty and those, the presentation of those facets. Okay, so we have error, evil, sin.
Iniquity in the finite domains reveals the transient reality of all God unidentified selfhood. Only as a creature becomes God identified does he become truly real in the universes. Finite personality is not self-created, but in the super universe arena of choice, it does self-determine destiny.
Okay.
In other words, you can just give it up for good. You're too hard.
Right. Yeah, you know, like you know, when man chooses to find God and be like him, such a choice is super finite. Only eternity can disclose whether this choice is also super absentite. But you know what it gets to eternity. You have full self-determination there. Now within, you know, everything else, you know, that it, you know, that doesn't you know, transcend the finite, you know, you're functioning in some boundaries, okay? You know, but in that case, it's absolute self-determination. No limit on it. Absolute self-determination, you know, regarding destiny. And another little thing here. Finite personality is not self-created. Kind of go aside from what we're immediately talking about here and just think about the consequences of that sentence for what we've talked about so much when we're trying to tease apart self and its nature and personality, the purposing that's imposed upon that self. Okay? The self has a temperament. Some of it is predicated merely on biology. It's right there from the get-go, genetically. Some of that temperament has to do with experiences, you know, some of it's nature, some of it's nurture, but that self has a temperament, okay? And especially the nurture part, you know, you say, well, that's self-created. Yeah, that temperament is self-created, and guess what? Finite personality is not self-created. Your temperament is not your personality, you're saying. I mean, you know, both the nature and the nurture, you know. Personality is different than the temperament, which you could get yourself thinking, well, that is self-created, so I think I found a mistake in the book. Okay, no, see, again, that's a point of, wait a minute, that doesn't jive with the way I've been rationalizing everything up to now. You know, I've been thinking, you know, all those things that are actually temperament are personality, and I've had all, you know, I've been all excited about all the things that humans have dreamt up, schemes about the different types of temperament, you know, that they call the different types of personality. No, those aren't different types of personality. Those are different types of temperament. Okay, it has nothing to do with personality. Yeah. So that's just a little aside. You know, that sort of teasing apart, you know, that clarification of what personality really is, how transcendent it really is from from self, you know, occurs all over in the book. Yeah, that's the next thing they're going to do. Is actually bring that out a little bit. This next paragraph is a really cool paragraph, super cool paragraph. And we're going to take a little bit of a diversion with it. It's tied to the handout. Okay, so before we take that diversion, because they're going to pick it up after this paragraph, remember what they just did. They gave you error, evil, sin, and iniquity very purposely, in their order. Okay, so we'll come back to that. Remember, mistaken, wrongly taken. That's choosing badness. That's giving bad. Giving badness form in your mind is evil. It's the definition of evil. Or if you want to go up there right after the inevitabilities, and they give you two nice little pithy definitions of error and evil. They call error unwise judgment, and evil mistaken judgment. Yep.
I'm thinking that one of the reasons they gave us that long view is as an antidote to this false liberty, to give us a picture of true freedom, the true liberty, as a comparison to what we've been working with all this time.
Yeah, true liberty is predicated on personal responsibility and self-control. That's why those came up back there. They were trying to get you to understand what is the difference between true and false liberty. but very, very good. That's, again, it's related to some of the other things I've been saying. To recognize that we challenge ourselves to wrap our minds around these ever bigger and more complex pictures of reality, because if we do that, the capacity of that inner temple expands. It has to, in order to wrap your mind around something bigger. Well, guess what? If you choose to supply the favorable conditions, i.e. if you expand that inner temple space, guess what? More ministry of God fits in that space now. Okay, you can be grown. Okay, expand the capacity, and then she will grow you to fill that capacity. And then expand the capacity again, and she will grow you to fill it. Man cannot cause growth, but he can supply favorable conditions. Okay, more technically, what are those favorable conditions? There's really nothing more fundamental to those favorable conditions than the space for growth to occur. If you choose to keep your capacity, the size of your inner temple, that big, then you cannot grow. Doesn't matter how infinite the input, how much you imagine is being input from the adjuster, for instance, there cannot be growth because you're choosing to self-limit. Right. We drop back two sections, and the word compossibility was in the title. Okay? God cannot make you bigger than you've chosen to be. And it's even worse if you choose to make yourself square, and God is circular, He can't make square circles. Okay? Okay. And the square part comes from error, evil, sin. Okay. All right, let's read this next little paragraph.
The bestowal of life renders material energy systems capable of self-perpetuation, self-propagation, and self-adaptation. The bestowal of personality imparts to living organisms the further prerogatives of self-determination, self-evolution, and self-identification with a fusion spirit of deity.
Okay. Now, before we've spent all of this time developing total deity and beginning to apply that expanded perspective, okay, this paragraph is like, okay, all right, and then you move on. You don't grab a hold of it with anything. You can't grab a hold of this paragraph without total deity. Okay? Until you've done what we've done, until you've taken the clues that they say they're giving you in deity and reality and in the forward, and you put it all together, okay, what they're pointing out in this paragraph is inaccessible. There's nothing that you can recognize it being in parallel with. Okay? Seven absolutes infinity are not going to get it done for you. Seven absolutes infinity don't give you the parallel of this paragraph. You have to have the total deity picture. Not only that, but one other thing before we actually go into it, that handout. Remember, one of the things that we've been doing is we've been talking about total deity, when we recognized that the designations they give, the different facets of total deity, some of them have the adjective infinite. And we recognized very early on, those are the reservoirs. That if the adjective is infinite, that's a reservoir. If you look at it from the individuality point of view. And we've been going through them one by one. We've done the infinite capacity. We've done the infinite potential. We've done the infinite upholder. We've even talked about the infinite spirit. There's the infinite one. If there's one we've never talked about, how about just the infinite? Where it's the noun and the adjective. It's kind of the infinite, right? Okay. We haven't ever stopped to say, wait a minute, that has to be a reservoir too. A reservoir of what? We're finally going to answer that question. You don't need it, but I'm just reminding you what we're doing. We laid out those 14 facets of total deity in these functional levels, the seven functional levels of total deity. Back in page 2 there of total deity, when we went through that, we've reminded ourselves of that several times. Okay, we're going to use that now. So this little handout I gave everyone here tonight. So I just, the handout just starts out, you're considering this paragraph we just read. Okay, and when I read that paragraph, I went, it's got a lot of self-hyphen words in it. That reminds me of something. That reminds me of the seven functional levels of total deity and how the labels on a whole bunch of those facets were self-hyphen something. I wonder if there's any relationship between the two. Okay, so this statement, this paragraph we just read, refers to the parallel between the abilities of a personalized self and the self-ability facets, the self-ability facets of deity in the seven functional levels of total deity, specifically. So before we go into specifics, here's a simple example of, what consequence does total deity have to me? Don't I just need the universal father? Isn't that all I need? No, they're trying to point out, no, you need a lot more than the universal father to understand the totality of you as a personalized self. You've got all these different things going on. And here's how they parallel total deity. Life animation. Remember, all these different things that we keep trying to find the reservoir for? The reservoir of spirit, reservoir of mind, reservoir of matter, reservoir of personality, and will, pattern. There's one thing we've never talked about. What about life animation? What reservoir does that come out of? The infinite. That's the reservoir. And just a little aside, remember how we talk about spirit substance is self-animating substance? Okay. In other words, animation is something that's antecedent to that point where you have spirit substance and matter substance, you know, the eternal sun and the paradise isle. You know, that reservoir has got to be antecedent, okay? Prior to, comes before it. Ante means before. And so think again about the name, the infinite spirit. You take the infinite, animation, and the infinite made spirit, the infinite spirit, animation made substance, self-animating substance. See? The infinite spirit is the infinite made spirit. The infinite capacity is the infinite made capacity. The infinite upholder is the infinite made upholder. The infinite potential is the infinite made potential. The infinite one is the infinite made oneness. Okay? It's very simple. You know, that's what those mean. You take the infinite, you know, and you create an expression subsequent to, you know, when we think about this, to that starting point of the infinite. But when all is said and done and you have total deity, you know, the infinite's not gone. The infinite's one of the 14 facets that are in this list. It's functioning on that first level, the static level. Okay? It's functioning. It's not in the past. You didn't rip it apart and, you know, it's no longer in existence. It's here and now. We're immersed in it. It's functioning. Okay, what consequences is that to you and I? That's where your life animation comes from. And that life animation that was added to your molecular structure came from the infinite.
Chris,
yep.
the functional levels are the blue ones?
No, all 14 of those, you know, two in each level.
I said seven.
There's seven levels, but there's two in each level. There's 14 facets.
All 14 are functional
levels? Yep. Well, no, there's seven functional levels, but there's two facets of deity functioning in each level. Okay, it's two facets functioning in each level. Like in the supreme level, there's two things functioning in that level. There's the supreme, obviously, functioning in that level, but there's also the infinite upholder. Those two facets of deity are both functioning in. Okay, so meanwhile, back to this. Okay, so life animation, the infinite, self-existent deity. Self-perpetuation, that's paralleling the infinite capacity. Self-projected deity, you know, self-perpetuation, self-projected. Mm-hmm. Self-propagation, well, that's tied to the universal creator. Self-distributive deity, that distributive, that's propagation. Creator. Self-adaptation, that's the infinite upholder. Self-experiential deity. Remember, if we take the infinite upholder, that's the deity or the unity viewpoint word. You know, we flip that around the individuality viewpoint. What's the name in the individuality viewpoint? No. The infinite upholder, flip it around, and you have the universal absolute. Infinite upholder, universal absolute. The reservoir of mind. The reservoir for mind energy. Okay, mind has a potential in it, the potential of adaptability, self-adaptation. Okay, yeah, that you have that adaptability, you have that mind is because you're in parallel to this facet of deity. Okay, just we're drawing a parallel here. See, just each of these facets of deity, there's something about you that's in parallel to that facet. It isn't, you know, don't think of it, you are that facet. You're in parallel to that facet. Okay? What it's doing is in parallel to what you're doing. It's self-experiential deity. Guess what? You're self-adapting. Okay? Okay, then the other bestowal, the other thing that's bestowed is personality in that paragraph. Well, we know that's in parallel too. You know, the reservoir of all will, you know, out of which personality is individuated, the infinite one, self-willed deity. Okay, now self-determination. Well, that one's pretty obvious. That's the infinite potential, i.e. self-purposive deity. Self-determination, self-purposive, that's obviously in parallel. Self-evolution. That's the universal controller, self-expansive deity. It's like, well, that isn't quite immediately obvious. Well, think about, where is the universal controller? Which functional level is it in here? It's in the evolutional level. Okay? Self-evolution. Here it's in parallel to self-expansive deity, to the universal controller. And then self-identification. Ah, here's the identification. That's in parallel to the universal father. Self-personalized deity. Okay? You know, and remember how they said that, and self-identification with a fusion spirit of deity is the way they state that in the paragraph. You know, what are you doing? Like I said, you have that, you're given this measure of purposing. Out of the totality of purposing, you're allowed the possibility, the potential to choose the identification point for that measure of the total purposing of infinity. Okay? It's not, you know, and it's totally a free will choice. You can say, well, I don't want to have a measure of the total purposing. I just want to disappear. Okay, fine. Then that's what will happen. Okay? But if you do want to, you know, be part of the whole, if you do want to, you know, have free will relative to that measure of the total purposing, you have to choose a point to identify that purposing to, an identity. Right now, you have a, you know, a material identity. This electrochemical mechanism, your material body. You know, that personality is identified here. Next, you'll have a Maranch identity. That purposing will be identified with that identity. You know, first stage spirit, you'll have a spirit identity, i.e., that purposing will be identified with, you know, at that point in all of the energy. Okay?
Earlier, you said that we have two choices, deity or infinity.
Mm-hmm. No, no. I mean, the two are the same. I mean, you know, that's, you know, in order, I mean, God, you know, think it, God has started a ball rolling. Okay, this isn't just a snowball that, you know, got jiggled and is rolling down a hill. I mean, God started this thing rolling. It's going to take something pretty serious for it to not keep rolling forever. It's not just going to be indifference. Okay? I mean, think about what they said. I mean, you know, error and evil, the adjuster just ignores. Well, tries to work around. Sin? No. Sin wields the adjuster. Okay? You've been given absolute free will. Wields the adjuster. Wields the adjuster. Remember, when you think of the adjuster as a wrench that's attached to your soul, you know, you have the choice of which way to turn that wrench. God started the ball rolling in the positive direction. You can choose to keep using the adjuster to ever tighten that soul relative to reality, or you can go the opposite direction. Okay, but that's the only, when I say you just, you know, you just want to disappear, you have to choose absolutely to disappear, because you're not just an energy phenomenon, you know, a material energy phenomenon. You have mind and spirit and personality, okay? I mean, humans, you know, think very simplistically about this. Well, you know, I'm just indifferent, you know, and so I'm just going to disappear. There is no such thing. Not, you aren't such a thing. You are something that has matter, mind, spirit, personality, and even Marantia, okay? You've got to negate all of that.
Yeah.
Procrastination. Tempt not the angels of thy watch care. To lead you in trouble.
No, there's a person that just doesn't want to do this. Just wants to, but it's not a bad person. They just don't want to.
Why are the mansion worlds there? The mansion worlds are there to give you a complete space in which you can be indifferent. Okay? But you know, you've heard me say it many times. You're not going to leave Gerizim via indifference. You know, via merely just riding the initial spiritual inertia that God gave you. You're not going to leave Gerizim. You have to choose. Okay, pointed this out a number of times. I mean, the key thing is these speed bumps, these difficulties, you know, that are put into your way. They'll be made bigger and bigger, you know, over the course of the seven mansion worlds. You know, if you haven't chosen, guess what? They get bigger. The speed bumps are bigger the next time. You know, and until you discover that you can't get to eternity by inertia, that just let the old snowball just roll all the way to paradise, okay? It's not going to happen that way. Because eventually they're going to make one so big that, you know, that initial inertia won't get you to the top, okay? You have to choose. They make it more and more difficult until you discover that there's only one thing that gets you to eternity, and that's the actualization, the realization of spiritual strength within you. You have to grab a hold of that which makes the ball roll, have a more inertia. You have to, you know, expand the capacity, fill it up. Well, something that's filled and bigger, guess what? That has more inertia. If you make it bigger and fill it, you know, like, well, actually, it gets filled. You know, if you make it bigger, you meet that bigger picture, whoop, you roll right over it. Okay?
What if the person never wants to leave world number one?
So stay here.
Yeah, just stay there for eternity.
As much as I could do.
I was thinking in relation to what Michael was saying, that maybe when we're spiritually lazy, maybe we just get tired of that. Yeah. You know, I mean, we see we're just not getting anywhere.
You just
get tired of being
tired. That's a good point, Joe. I think that's what happened to me.
You get tired of being tired. Yeah.
The thing that you got to, there's one little difficult transition in consciousness you got to make between how you experience this, how you think about this now, and how you will then. Remember, there's one big difference. Now you perforce must serve two masters. But only in the material mortal life, and then that's done. Okay, so in that next life, you don't have that material inertia that can just kind of keep you anchored. You know, if you want to just lay there on your back, you know, and wait for the dates to drop in your mouth, you don't have that luxury anymore. They've taken that away. They've taken that stabilization away. So you're now a more fluid phenomenon. That can't just lay there anymore. It's not an option anymore. You have only two choices, whoosh, or integrity in going forward. Okay? Yeah. Okay? You can't just fall back on your material grace. Okay? So, see, that's the one thing is you got to think about this. I mean, it's just... You may think, can I just do like I used to? No, it's not an option anymore. You've got to choose. And guess what? If you aren't choosing integrity, it's inexorable. You're just going to start to diffuse. Okay? Liquids need a container. Okay? The liquid is not just going to sit there. Okay? I mean the value, your value just dissipates out of that Marantia form. You have to choose. I mean, you know,
what happens when you diffuse like that? If you're not choosing, are you choosing iniquity then?
Well, you're not choosing iniquity. Okay, just stop and think a second. I mean, if I become less focused, okay, I'm opening up more possibility for confusion and things gonna start creeping in. If I don't have God the Mother like, you know, cosmic harmony integrity, I mean, it's not like you're existing in a hermetic cell. You're being buffeted about. You know, ask Nod and Van, you know, if they existed in a little hermetically sealed, you know, shell. No, they were being buffeted about. And the question was in play. You know, do you have what it takes? Do you have the cosmic integrity to handle this buffeting? You know, and notice it smack, 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 smack.
There was a gentleman just recently okay. That happened to, isn't it? Physically, and if he just chose the rent over getting buffeted.
Yeah, yeah.
He has not been buffeted.
You want to be bobbing about like a cork? Yeah, and see, that's the thing.
Okay. Nod was
too diffuse. A very difficult challenge confronted him. He was too fuzzy. And he broke. You need integrity. You need spiritual strength. Because you're going to be assailed. Pain and suffering are essential to progressive evolution. There is differential in the finite universe. You can't avoid it. It's going to hit you. Come hell or high water, it's going to hit you. You know, one way or another, you're going to be hit. You know, and if you're ever more diffuse, guess what? You know, as long as you're in that perfect place, it's fine. You can be really fuzzy. Okay, that's why right now humans can be really, really fuzzy, but they don't. You know, they've got a boat anchor attached to them. You know, the material keeps you grounded. You take that away, if you start getting fuzzy, too fuzzy, something's going to come up, and you're going to start to come apart. It's going to rip you in half, okay? You've got to choose to have the integrity, you know? Now, you're not doing, you know, again, it sounds scary initially. It's like, well, but remember, you've got all kinds of helpers who are all around you trying to hold the fuzziness, you know, together. They're trying to help you, okay? But, you know, if you're saying, well, whatever, you know, I don't need you. Go away, you bother me. Okay, angels are always hovering over you. Okay, guess what? Okay, okay, that's what we're talking about.
I don't plan on being confused on the mantle.
Okay,
I'm just curious.
You know, Nod didn't want to choose iniquity, but he was fuzzy, got difficult, started with error. Next came evil. Next game, sin. Next game, iniquity. It's an inexorable process if you're too fuzzy.
He went in legal.
He's
king of the fuzziness.
Right. Okay. All right. Meanwhile, back to total deity.
What
do
you
say
fuzzy? What did you say?
I mean, you know.
Sort of
no. I mean, not clear. I mean, if you read. Okay. One section title in paper 102. If you read the section title, Certitude of the Divine, do you immediately think, oh, that's talking about fuzzy? No, that's talking about anti-fuzzy. Okay, that's what I mean by fuzzy. I mean the antithesis of, you know, I am a son of I am. It's who I am. Who are you? Okay, the certitude of the divine, that's not fuzzy. You have to have that certitude of the divine, rock solid, anchored in the Isle of Paradise. There's nothing fuzzy about the Isle of Paradise. Okay, it's absolutely rock solid. You've got to be like it. No thing can break you. Nothing. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, so let's get back to that. Okay, so I was trying to explain that. Okay, we got way off on that wrong, not wrong track, but that sidetrack. Okay, so you've got this. I was trying to get to that point of the the first stage spirit, where your identity is basically that adjuster, you know, with your soul infused into it. Okay, you personalize that adjuster, your body, yourself. See? There's a self-personalized phenomenon when all is said and done there over the course of the local universe career. When all is said and done, you are self-personalized. That adjuster has been seeking that personality. Okay, that, it's in parallel. Just like the Father, you know, when the Father personalizes the actuality of the eternal Son, you know, bestows spirit pattern upon that actuality and makes him, you know, a being. He self-personalizes. You know, you can think of there's all that personality that's not going to get individuated into you and me and the eternal Son and whatnot. You know, that part that isn't going to get given to someone else, think of it going out and coming right back again. Self-personalized. That's his purposing. Okay? And that, when all is said and done, that's what happens with you. The personality has been sent out from the Father, and it looped right back, and guess where it ended up? On the fragment of the Father. Self-personalized. But you've chosen, just like he chose, to make it loop back. And not just go off. You chose to make it turn around and loop back.
So when that's when you see the Father starts here, and the thought adjusters are the fragments of the Father, and they're all with us. And then when we become self, when we're personalized with the thought adjuster, then we become that part of God that is a individual God, basically the personality.
Not God. God likeness, but not God. Very important to distinguish between God-like and God. Yeah. 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 Okay.
I mean,
when we are, we're like God. God likeness. Right, I mean, that personality, see, it's self-identified. It's identified back. See, the identification point of that purposing. Okay? Okay. Yeah, right, right. All right. Okay, so... Okay, so you've got eight things here, you know, that I've pulled out of that paragraph. They break into two sets, okay? You have all these facets of deity that are self-ability, self-existent deity, self-projected deity, self-distributed, you know, et cetera, okay? I've got eight of them there in the list. If you go back and look here, there's nine. We're missing one still. We'll get to that in a second. One other thing that we want to note is how we've got two sets of four here. You know, and the first one, I mean, if you go back and look at those carefully, remember that how we have two different things happening there. Some of them are relationships, you know, we represented with the curly brackets, and some of them are direct expressions that we represented with the square brackets. Direct expression is the word. Yes, that's the word. Direct expression. Okay. And if you compare it here, you'll see that self-existent deity is a direct expression, you know, the infinite. And self-willed deity, the infinite one, is a direct expression. But the other six here are relationships. So there's a very definite pattern here. This isn't just random, okay? It's broken up into a direct expression and then three relationship ones and then another direct expression and three relationship ones. And it's pretty obvious what the two sets are. First one's God the Mother, second one's God the Father. Okay? Okay. For those of you who haven't been spending the last year studying total deity, there's going to be a number of things that are, you know, not going to be immediately obvious here. Okay? But this is... No. The infinite. Just look. What's the first line? The infinite. The infinite and the infinite one are the two direct expressions in those eight. Okay, there's one more self, ability, facet of deity, and there's one other thing going on in that paragraph. There's the bestowal. You know, we've talked about the things that are bestowed, but what about the bestowal itself? The act of bestowing. Is that paralleling the other one? Well, think about it here. The bestowal of life animation as a direct expression of the infinite. See, the infinite is a direct expression, you know, and it's a direct expression of the infinite. Originates. You know, the one we have left is the original. Remember? That originates from the universal one of infinity, self-contained deity, functioning as the paradise trinity. And we've talked about this a whole bunch. That universal one of infinity, the original, has two sides. Go the two directions around the infinite eternal ellipse. Okay? You know the bestowal has to go back to the original. Okay, that's obviously, you know, and so sure enough, that's the one we haven't paralleled yet. It's completely logical. And there's two sides to that. Well, yeah, there's two bestowals. And we know those two sides are related to the Father and the Mother. Yeah. Like we said, that's why we have two bestowals here. We've got the Father side and the Mother side. Well, the bestowal of personality as a direct expression of the infinite one, or the first source, originates from the universal one of infinity functioning as the first center. The original functions as the paradise trinity and the first center on the mother side and the father side, respectively. The two bestowals. You know, remember we brought that up last time. That's why they, you know, why did they introduce the one time in the book when they said God the infinite? And they were going, well, they must want me to think about something here. And that's what we did. For the first time, we thought about that. Oh, thank God the infinite. And there's two fundamental expressions, you know, through the paradise trinity in the infinite capacity, that's God the infinite expresses as God the mother. Through the, you know, the first center and the infinite one, God the infinite expresses as God the father. The first center and the paradise trinity are two different names for the universal one of infinity.
Where is it on this?
I'll show you afterwards. Okay, so that's the, so all, we have all nine, self. You know, if you look, you know, out of these 14, nine of them are self abilities, and then the other ones are things like the Son, the Spirit, the Sevenfold, the Supreme, and the Ultimate. There's five more that aren't self hyphen something. Okay? That's a little bit of a separate story. This is just paralleling all of those. Okay, there's nine things in this paragraph, and there's nine self-ability facets of deity. They're in direct parallel. You have all of that nature, that ninefold nature, because of those nine facets of total deity. That's why you have those. If there weren't those nine facets, you'd be missing, like self-determination or self-evolution or self-adaptation. Sorry, you'd be missing something.
I missed the last one because there's eight. You said there's one more, but it wasn't here. Where's that added? Oh, this one's self-contained. Okay.
No, yeah. The actual bestowal.
Oh, the bestowal.
The bestowal of whatever. The bestowing is in parallel to, you know, the infinite, the universal one of infinity.
Yeah. Bestowal of life animation.
Or the bestowal of personality. No, life animation. Yes.
Any life.
But what are you? You're matter. You start with matter. And then what's added to matter? No. No, what's added to matter? No.
Life animation.
Life animation is added to matter. And then what's added to that animated matter? Mind. And then what's added to that minded animated matter? Spirit, and then what's added to that spirit-directed mind?
Personality.
Right. One step at a time.
Personality presages the spirit.
See, so we have matter, life animation, mind, spirit, and personality. We have five things. There better be five reservoirs.
It's in the
you know?
It's in the, isn't it in the
So go down, you know, down here, you know, and look, you know, count how many, you know. Yes. See, there's, we have one thing from each reservoir. Okay. Okay. So just one other little thing, as long as we're finally clear on, not on everything, clear on the origin point, the source of life animation, that's coming out of the reservoir of the infinite. Let's think just a moment about it. Remember, because there's two phases of life animation. Can we understand what those two phases are about now? Remember, the first phase is called living vitality, and the second is called the reproductive spark. You know, when you go back and read the Life Carrier paper, they point out that there's two phases of that. It isn't all together as one. There's first you give living vitality, and then you add the reproductive spark. Or, for instance, prokaryotes only have the living vitality. Eukaryotes also have the reproductive spark. That's why we have two different fundamental, you know, that fundamental division into two, you know, domains in living things. Those that just have the living vitality and those that also have the reproductive spark. Okay, so the bestowal of living vitality, the first phase of life animation, is an inherent action of God the Mother. That just happens because, remember, in life carriers, you know, it just happens because they're there. Because they're the conduit, you know, through which the Mother is flowing here. However, the bestowal of the reproductive spark, the second phase of life animation, is in coordination with the creativity of deity, specifically by the Spirit and the Mother together as one. Go up, you know, that first set of four, the self-propagation. Okay. What's that in parallel to? The universal creator. Okay. If you look where the, you know, on the creative level here, you have the universal creator. And the other thing that you have functioning on the level is the Spirit. Okay. Not surprising. See, in order to actually make that self-propagation come into play, just like you see that, it's paralleling the creative level, total deity functioning, that level has to be involved. Yeah, the reproductive spark to make it truly self-propagating, you know, reproduction, so that you have reproduction in play, instead of just, you know, prokaryotes don't reproduce. They just produce copies of themselves. There's no reproduction. There's no sex, sexual, you know, there's no meiosis and mitosis. Okay. See, that brings in, some, you know, when you go back and read that, they point that out about that reproductive spark. If you go back and read paper 36, you know, the Life Carrier paper, you'll see that they point that out. And they italicize the word by even, that it's by the Spirit. Okay. And you go, oh, wow, yeah, now it all makes sense. No wonder the creative Mother Spirit can do this. She can be the point for both the, you know, the immediate source point for the living vitality and the reproductive spark, because she is the Spirit hyphen Mother type deity together as one. That's what she is. So she can do both these jobs. Yeah. No, I'm referring to the type of deity that's called the Spirit. Like I just said, you think about a creative Mother Spirit. There's two types of deity. She starts out as just a downstepped expression of the Spirit type deity, as a creative Spirit. I mean, the Infinite Spirit is the Spirit type deity. You know, way at that high level, yeah, you create a downstepped expression of that type of deity that's called the Spirit. You got to remember, you know, the Spirit does, you know, that's a type of deity. It has many, you know, it's expressed in a hierarchical fashion. It isn't just referring to one being. Okay. Then you bring, you know, the Trinity, the primary eruption, you bring in the mother type deity and you fuse the two together. You know, so as a creative Mother Spirit, there's two types of deity, the Spirit type deity and the mother type deity together as one. If you go back there in the local universe paper, you'll see that, you know, they point that out. They actually label her type of deity as, you know, just like this, the Spirit hyphen mother type deity. Capital S and capital M. Okay, that's the type of deity that she is. And then that's personalized. You know, you have a flavor of deity. God is personalized deity. See, purposing is imposed upon that deity. Now you have her, the creative mother spirit. Okay? And she can do both of this. She has to be the mother to do either of them. And she has to also be the spirit type deity to do the reproductive spark part. Well, coincidentally, she is. Okay. Okay. Well, that's not individuality. That's deity. There isn't any individuality on there. The eternal Son's not on there. Okay, that's just deity. It's total deity, not total God. It's total deity, the Spirit. Okay. You know, the primary expression. Okay, I mean you got two things. You've got the spirit type deity. It's all of it is here. I'm going to take a great big chunk of the spirit type deity, and I'm going to make the infinite spirit out of it. And then I'm going to take a whole bunch of little chunks of the spirit type deity, and I'm going to make creative spirits out of it. Okay, the unity, the spirit. See, it's this vast unity fact, which has many downstepped expressions. It's all the spirit type deity. See, because from a unity viewpoint, it's all just the Spirit, all together as one, that's why when you look at it from an individuality viewpoint, do the creative Spirit and the infinite Spirit have to be constantly racking up cell phone minutes in order to stay on the same page? No. They're fundamentally on the same page because they're the same deity expressed different vertical levels. But it's the same deity, the Spirit. This is what the revelation is trying to add that humans have never had in any of their thinking. The unity viewpoint, deity. Deity and God are not synonyms anymore. You know, we've talked about this over and over. You have to allow the unity viewpoint, which is what that is. These are the seven functional levels of total deity. Unity viewpoint, not God. Deity. Okay?
When you talk about total deity, it's understood that God doesn't go from one thing to another. All of this in self-existent deity is self-contained. All of this is already happening, already in the past, already in the future. It's
It just is.
It just is.
Yeah.
Right, and it's right. All sequential
and because it is with all of this structure, we are with all of our structure, like this paragraph is saying. You aren't a simple structure. You have self-perpetuation, self-propagation, self-adaptation, et cetera, et cetera. You have all these different facets to what you are because the source of everything has all these different facets. And everything below reflects that which is above. Okay.
So we would be like we're sons and daughters of God. Yeah. We'd be a downstep of the eternal sons.
Right. No matter how far you downstep, there's some, signature of where it all started. The downstepping started with these 14 facets. No matter how far you go down, even if you go down to us, we still have the birthmark of where we came from. What we are fundamentally came down from above. It didn't well up out of the ooze by magic. Okay, it came down from above. Okay, if you welled up from the ooze, you wouldn't have this complicated structure. You'd have one property, oozeness. Okay, but instead you've got life animation, and you have you've got all of this complication. Okay.
Then how some scientists think they can create life.
Right.
Yeah.
As if, you know, you and I could somehow make something that parallels the nine facets of deity, not to mention the other five that we haven't even aren't even talking about specifically here. You know, you exist immersed in seven functional levels of total deity with two facets of deity on each level. You're immersed in extreme complexity. Okay?
Right.
Yeah.
You
know, think about this whole bit about why should I contemplate the unity viewpoint. Once you have the unity viewpoint, are you ever going to imagine again that life is some sort of an accident, you know, where some mud stuck to a magic crystal one day? Are you ever going to entertain that notion, no matter how much calculus you use to describe it? No, it's obviously false. That's what the unity viewpoint does to you. It changes, it gives you self-evident consciousness. The mother viewpoint, self-evident consciousness. Okay, so that was our huge aside. Meanwhile, back to error, evil, sin, and iniquity.
Subpersonal living things indicate mind-activating energy matter. First as physical controllers, and then as agitant mind spirits. Personality endowment comes from the Father and imparts unique prerogatives of choice to the living system. But if personality has the prerogative of exercising volitional choice of reality identification, and if this is a true and free choice, then must evolving personality also have the possible choice of becoming self-confusing, self-disrupting, and self-destroying. The possibility of cosmic self-destruction cannot be avoided if the evolving personality is to be truly free in the exercise of finite will.
Okay. Before we go into the obvious part of that paragraph, you know, make sure everyone knows the technicality that they never, you know, ignore. Subpersonal living things indicate mind activating energy matter. First is physical controllers. What kind of mind are we talking about there?
Mechanical
mind. And then the adjutants, right? Okay, so, you know, that was, we skipped over that when we were, you know, we got the matter and then the life animation and the mind. Well, actually, mind comes in two steps. You know, it's mechanical mind and then it's, you know, it's adjutant mind. And, you know, because there's two things, that's why you have another great division in all living things. You've got plants that just have mechanical mind and animals that also have adjutant mind, right? Yeah. Yep, yep. Non-teachable and teachable mind in that order, yep. Okay, so, I mean, you guys have, you know what I'm probably going to point out. I've got four words that start with self hyphen. I wonder if that has a parallel to anything else in this section. Now, I bet you the order is important, because it always is. Error, evil, sin, iniquity. Okay, error is self-confusing, evil, self-disrupting, sin, self-destroying, iniquity, self-destruction. That's what those four are. So that should help, again, to clarify. Think of, if it's merely error, you know, what's happened? You've grabbed a hold of goodness, maybe just out of ignorance, but you've got a hold of goodness. But what have you done? You haven't connected it to fact. You've connected it to figment. You're confused about the difference between fact and figment. You know, and you've tried to create a relationship between goodness and figment. You're confused. Okay, you have the ability to be self-confusing. Okay, error is a possibility. Okay, and then you take it that next step. If you actually grab a hold of badness, see, just to think about how you've upped the phenomenon inside. It's not just confusion. Internally, now it's disruption. Okay, it's like you've driven a disrupting wedge, you know, of misdirection. You know, that spirit is potentially directing, you know, And so, you know, you direct, you have this mixed direction, you know, disrupting, kind of splitting into your wholeness, okay, disrupting it. But it's still not destroying, it's just disrupting. Like we were pointing out earlier, sin, you know, takes the next step. Now you're knowingly choosing the badness, not because you didn't know that, because you couldn't distinguish the difference between goodness and badness. You know, now you're knowingly choosing badness because you know it's badness, full on. That's self-destroying. That turns the wrench in the loosening way. You know, that unravels your soul. Yep. You know, and if you take it all the way to iniquity, the self-destroying goes to self-destruction. So, error, evil, sin, and iniquity. Self-destruction. You literally, completely unravel any cosmic integrity. It has zero value, you know, hence it has zero meaning. And it's not real anymore. Yeah. It has no depth. It has no length. It has no insight, no breadth. Okay, zero volume. And, you know, and so the question is, well, I wonder if my zero volume goes on. It's nothing. It can't do anything. It certainly can't go on. You know, how could it be self-perpetuating if there's nothing to perpetuate? Okay? That's what they're trying to get you to think about this stuff logically. It's not some sort of arbitrary thing. It either is or it isn't. Error, evil, sin, and iniquity. So this is a really good paragraph to remember and go back to and reflect on those. That sequence is a very helpful sequence. Am I being self-confusing, self-disrupting? Okay.
Therefore, is there increased safety in narrowing the limits of personality choice throughout the lower levels of existence? Choice becomes increasingly liberated as the universes are ascended. Choice eventually approximates divine freedom when the ascending personality achieves divinity of status, supremacy of consecration to the purposes of the universe, completion of cosmic wisdom attainment, and finality of creature identification with the will and the way of God.
I don't know. I see a couple of pairs of two there. Okay. You know, they always start you out easy, so you can, okay. Supremacy of consecration to the purposes of the universe. Or as they pithily call it, way up in the front part of the book, consecration of purpose. You know, perfection of purpose. Okay. When you enter Havona, you have one measure of perfection. What is it? Perfection of purpose. Perfection. It's in italics up there. If you go and look it up, perfection of purpose. You have one measure of perfection when you enter Havona. Perfection of purpose, i.e., you have perfect consecration of your will to the perfect will of God the Father. First phrase, supremacy of consecration to the purposes of the universe. That's the God the Father phrase. I'll bet you I know what the next one is. Completion of cosmic wisdom attainment. Okay. Perfect consecration of your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother. Yeah, wisdom, cosmic, mother words. Okay. You know, you start out in Havona with perfection of purpose, the Father part. As you go through Havona, you achieve the Mother part. Completion of cosmic wisdom attainment. So they're both perfected when you get to the Isle of Paradise. And finality, oh, that's probably why they call them finaliters. Okay. And finality of creature identification. It's a nice little definition of what a finaliter is, see? It's an individual who has finality of creature identification with just the will of God? No. The will and the way of God. You know? The Father and the Mother. Okay? You know, so they keep the order. Father, Mother, and then Father, Mother again. Okay? So that the way they end that, they purposely are trying to strongly put you into this father, mother, you know, total picture reflection, just like we, you know, in our side journey, we really brought out a lot of the, you know, the father and the mother. And specifically this order. And the very next thing that we're going to read next time is the title of this section, Control and Overcontrol. Father and Mother. Okay, so we'll continue that journey that we're ending on here next time. And they'll start out with a nice little, further reflection on the difference between your relationship to God the Father and your relationship to God the Mother, and how control and overcontrol, that distinction of words, is used in the Revelation to point to that difference. All right, so you'll see there's some great stuff too. It just this is a really fascinating paper. As you can see, we've unearthed a number of really, pretty significant elements in here. It sounds really dry, the title, Supreme and Ultimate Time and Space. Okay, it's very rich. It's got some very very important, elements of the whole Revelation are only in this paper. It's so important that John, had to quote three paragraphs from this next section in his closing on the videos he's working on now. Some beautiful poetry of prose in this next section that was an inspiration for John's endings on those videos. So we'll get to that next time. Let's take a moment here.